on Business and Labor for March 11th, 2013. The schedule that we've got today, we're going to go through and have the public hearings, and then we'll have some work sessions. There are a couple of bills that need to be either rescheduled or carried over. We are going to reschedule 2383. There's some amendments coming in that we don't have yet. And we're going to carry over until Wednesday, 2448. Okay. What we're going to do is open the public hearing on House Bill 2692. Representative Greenberg.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is a bill that requires school districts to determine the competency of a teacher when considering which teachers will be retained when the district reduces staff under certain circumstances. Declares an emergency, becomes effective July 1st, 2013.
Okay. Is Representative Parker here also, or Representative Greenberg?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I appreciate you hearing House Bill 2692, and I'll give you just a little bit of background on the bill and talk about where it's going. And I want to make sure that it's clear I'm going to say some things about what happened in the Beaverton School District, but I don't intend to be beating up on the Beaverton School District. They'll be here, I think, to talk about the bill as well. But what happened was...
Sorry, could you identify yourself for the record?
Myself?
We know you, but the record doesn't.
It's early to figure out who I am.
That's right.
We think we know you.
Thank you. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is one-third City of Portland, Multnomah County, and two-thirds unincorporated Washington County. And that group in unincorporated Washington County are part of the Beaverton School District. So this bill was brought to me, or the problem was brought to me, by a group of very upset parents in the spring of last year. The Beaverton School District needed, because of financial problems, to reduce their staff by about 350 teachers. And in doing that, it was obviously a very difficult problem, and they followed what they believed was the state law on it, that they needed to take into consideration only two things, seniority and licensure. The state law, as it currently is, the statute, it has a mandatory requirement in layoffs of seniority and licensure, and it has optional considerations to be taken into consideration, including competency and merit. The angry or upset parents that came to talk to me were parents of a fourth grade class in Beaverton, where a middle school art teacher had been assigned to teach their fourth grade kids. They were pretty upset with that, and apparently so was the teacher, who my understanding is soon took leave because of stress-related problems. When they complained to the school district said they only had to take into consideration seniority and licensure, and they put teachers into classrooms for which they were licensed to teach. Whether or not that was the case is an issue. All this bill does, and it's a very simple bill to read, all this bill does is move competency into one of the required things to consider when you lay off teachers, so that when you put a teacher in a classroom, you have to consider seniority, licensure, and whether they're actually competent to teach that class. And the statute defines what competency is. It seems to me an obvious thing to do. And I mean, it seems to me if you're going to assign a teacher, they ought to be competent to teach the class that they're going to be assigned to. The statute defines competency, and you will have an amendment from, I think, the Oregon Education Association that defines competency in a slightly different way. I support that amendment. It seems to me we ought to be prepared to define competency. It also allows the school boards and the unions to define competency independently of the statute as a part of the collective bargaining agreement. And in fact, the Beaverton current collective bargaining agreement has competency defined in it. Basically, that's all it does. It's very straightforward. It moves competency from a voluntary to a mandatory consideration when assigning teachers to a classroom.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Greenlink? Representative Thompson?
I obviously haven't read this bill yet. Is there any appeals process in it for a teacher that has been deemed incompetent and may question that? I mean, in you and I's relationship, I refer to you as incompetent occasionally, and you don't agree with me, you know, but...
I always agree with you. Madam Chair, Representative Thompson, the definition you'll see in an amendment gives there lots of room for it. In the amendment, it allows the, if they've taught a class, that class in the last 10 years, they can be deemed competent, and if they need to upgrade their skills in a way, it gives them, it does in the current definition well, it gives the teachers a chance to agree to take classes or whatever it is they need to do to bring their skills up so they'd be competent to teach a class. It's a pretty open definition.
Yeah, my concern in asking the question is I've been aware of situations in the past where principals have had disagreements with particular teachers, and it would be very easy to declare them incompetent and they're out of there. You know, it has nothing to do with competence. It has to do with the principal doesn't like them. So there needs to be some.
Not having anything to do with the bill, my problem has been that didn't happen often enough.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Okay, any other questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I'd like to call...
Representative
Hovey had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, thanks. And maybe you addressed this and I didn't quite catch it. But so the school district in determining competency, do they have any requirements as to the people that are making that determination?
No. That's the district people that make that determination. It's just that they have to do it and they have to declare it. In the current situation, unless there's something in the collective bargaining agreement about it, they don't have to take competency or merit, two other factors, into consideration in the transfer teacher, but it's the district that does it.
So the district has no criteria for the people that would declare whether or not a teacher is competent or not? It's just the
It
district.
Has criteria for what competence is, but I assume that's an administrative function in the, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Holby, I assume that's a function of the administration of the district, although as with anything else that goes on, things can be grieved, and I assume this can be grieved as well.
Thank you.
Is there any criteria for an incompetent administrator?
That's a really important question, and one that...
I think it is.
Yeah. The answer is not in the determination of assigning teachers.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Graham?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Greenlink.
I'll go next door to my job.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we have Justin Black, Karen Stratton, and Steve Hammond. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Justin Black. I'm from the Oregon Education Association. I'll be very brief and then have our two members from Beaverton give their story. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Greenlink for reaching out to us early to work on this bill. The bill itself, we feel, is a little unnecessary since statute already gives districts the ability to use competency and merit when bumping educators. But we feel like we've been able to work on amendments to make the statute clearer for districts, more workable for us, and better overall. So we will continue those efforts to come back with something that is, I think, agreeable from all parties, because we'd all like to see something something that is workable and something that gets educators in places where they can be successful. But on the face of the bill, the original bill, our organization is opposed to it, but we will work for amendments. So I will now hand it off to the real educators.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the committee.
You don't have to. You can sit back.
Sit back.
Microphone.
Okay. Perfect. My name's Karen Stratton. I'm a fourth grade teacher at Sexton Mountain Elementary in Beaverton. I'm also a BEA board member, so I was privy to some of the problems that Representative Greenlick talked about that prompted the introduction of the bill. And I'm happy to be here today, but you may know that I'm not in my classroom today because we had a budget reduction day, one of five that we have this year. So I'm not with my 31 fourth graders today, and they're all at home instead of in school. Over the past 5 years, school districts have seen such a disinvestment in education, and our budget has been cut repeatedly. Led to this massive layoff of my colleagues last summer, which has never occurred before in Beaverton. We cut 344 positions. This resulted in 204 teachers getting laid off and 350 teachers getting reassigned. The loss of those teachers and the reassignment created tremendous turmoil for us, not only for the teachers and the students, as you heard, for the parents. It has not been an easy year for us. I was personally affected by the cuts and layoffs in several ways. First, my teaching partner of 8 years was reassigned to teach ESL instead. She was reassigned involuntarily. And I gained two new partners at the fourth grade level, one voluntary transfer, one involuntary transfer. Neither of my new partners had taught fourth grade before. One of them had been out of the classroom for 28 years and had spent 18 years as a librarian. We cut our librarians last year. However, both of these teachers that were transferred to be my partners had years of teaching experience. On paper was my librarian partner as qualified as a teacher who, a newer, less senior teacher who had taught fourth grade more recently? Perhaps not. However, and the parents were concerned at the beginning of the year. I heard about it. But because of her teaching experience and her commitment to her students, she has become a fabulous fourth grade teacher. I am very proud that she is my partner, and we have done great work this year. And what about my former partner who hadn't taught ESL in the 8 years since she had been my partner? She received extensive training in new assessment methods and used her decades of teaching experience to become an excellent ESL teacher. It's been a very positive year in our school for her and her students. I agree with Representative Greenlick that teachers should be put in positions where they can excel and give their students what they need to succeed. But I don't agree that we need this bill as it's written. It grew out of an unusual and difficult situation. We already have statutes that tell us who is qualified to teach certain subjects. We don't need additional rules that might have unintended consequences and put experienced teachers in jeopardy of losing their jobs. I challenge you to find the resources necessary to prevent future layoffs. In the last few years, we've lost over 4,000 educators across the state. And my students suffer every day from the inadequate resources. Like I said, we don't have a certified librarian. We no longer have a counselor at our school of 600 students. Our counselor has been assigned to two schools to teach in our specials program. That's like PE and music. So we don't have someone we can send troubled students to. Every emotional and social problem that my 31 students have is on my shoulders. My kids get PE every fourth day. They get music every eighth day. Next year, that may be cut out altogether, our music program. My class size has grown in 8 years from 23 or 24 to 31, and I don't have the largest class in my school or my district at fourth grade. We have up to 38 students in some of our fourth grade classes. I understand layoff and reassignment was difficult for students and parents. I don't believe this one-time event requires a legislative solution that's been proposed. Beaverton has already made some teaching reassignments at the semester break and is working proactively to place teachers in more appropriate classrooms next year and has worked hard, as I said, to give the staff development necessary to make sure our teachers are ready to teach those students. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Hammond. I'm a science teacher.
You can sit back from the microphone.
I'm a science teacher at Arts and Communication Magnet Academy in Beaverton. That's their arts magnet there. It's a 6 through 12 school. I'm speaking about this bill, but also will add a little bit about what the year's like for me and my colleagues in that building and throughout the district. This year, we had relatively few transfers at my school, but we did have the loss of our librarian, and we had a teacher who was transferred into our school from a primary teaching position to teach middle school, humanities and social studies, who has since then been transferred back to a different school to better suit her position, as Karen was talking about, a reassignment to try to better suit teachers to what they're prepared for. I would like to first mention that this year my teaching load has gone up tremendously. As Karen said, it used to be in the mid to upper 20s or so. I teach both middle school and high school science classes, science 7 and 8 this year, chemistry and physics, and my average class load is 38 students per class. In the first semester, I had 50 seventh graders in one class, 45 eighth graders in another. Each of those has gone down by one student this semester just because of schedule changes they have due to their electives. I have over 30 in each of my chemistry classes and my physics class. And so then I also have a homeroom class, which does have a curriculum component of 26 students. So I serve over 230 students every 2 days and try to keep track of them all. And I'm not alone. That's an average, and it's pretty typical of my school and typical of many of the other teachers in the district. Now, as far as this bill goes, I understand the motivation for this bill from Representative Greenlick and apparently Representative Harker. However, I don't think it's the way to solve this problem. Beaverton experienced this one-time problem, as Ms. Stratton said. We are all competent to teach. The Teacher Standards and Practices Commission makes sure of that. I'm licensed to teach, and I'm deemed competent for the area and the grade levels that I am licensed to teach by that certification. That by itself tells me that tells the district and the state that I am competent to teach those things. I've gone through extensive training prior to ever stepping in a classroom in order to gain that competence. And as a teacher with 17 years experience, I would say that I'm more competent now because of all that experience. All the teachers that we have in Beaverton are competent to teach. And if we are going to start trying to rank competence of teachers against each other, we're going to get into a whole morass of problems that this bill does nothing to address as it is written. This would be a tremendous challenge and problem for administrators, both at the building level and at the district level, to try to determine who is more competent than whom. How are we going to do that? Obviously, seniority is not necessarily something that tells us that one teacher is more competent than another, but it is a measure of experience, and experience is a great teacher in this profession, as it is in most. That's why it has been that way for many years, that you generally do have many of the problems solved that first, second, third year teachers have not had to go through yet. I can tell you that those first couple of years are the most challenging years when you're just figuring out your sea legs as a teacher. And some teachers do not get through those first two or three years without retiring and deciding to do something else. I see a definition of competence in this bill, but I don't really think it does very much to clarify what districts and administrators would be having to do. How would they determine this? And as some of the questions have already alluded to, would some of those determinations be merely personal, subjective determinations? Where's the objectivity in determining competence if you're going to try to measure competence of teachers in determining transfers? Further, we already have many statutes, both state and federal, that determine whether teachers are highly qualified under federal definition for their positions, and we have restrictions in schools that have Title I funds so that teachers must be highly qualified for their positions at those schools. Lastly, I think the districts, all districts around the state, are already most interested in having competent teachers in their positions. The public ensures that because the public demands it. If they see a teacher who is not competent, building principals and administrators at the district level will hear about it. And so I really don't see a lot of need for this bill. I think it's in reaction to our one-time problem, which has already been addressed in many ways. I think it's a little too nebulous as written. If it's clarified, perhaps it would be more worthy of consideration. But I would urge you to not pass on the bill as written, because I think that it doesn't do a very good job of addressing a problem which is a pretty one-time problem at this point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have any questions of the panelists? Representative Kennemer.
Thank you. Ms. Stratton, I was just trying to understand the magnitude of this problem. 344 positions is a lot, but how many positions all told then? Do you know? In the district.
How many positions?
How many teaching positions?
How many FTE do you
FTE,
have?
Totally.
Yeah. Were cut?
Were. It well, was. No, 344
344
were
cut.
But out of how many?
Oh, we used to have about 2,400 teachers. Yeah.
So about 10%.
Over 10%, yeah.
Okay, that's what I was trying to understand.
And the district.
It's still gigantic.
District, you know, basically what they did was they increased all class sizes at all levels, and they cut every librarian from every school. So that was, we have 55 schools, so that was 55 positions right there. But many of those librarians needed to be placed in other positions because they had other teaching licenses.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got Lloyd Benson, Carolyn Marnock, and Joy Orharnock, and Joy Marshall. Okay, thank you. Make sure identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Joy Marshall.
You don't have to be so close to the microphone.
The name.
You need to identify yourself when you're testifying.
Sure.
Before you testify.
Just for the clear the record, my name's Lloyd Bernstein. I'm not the senator from Texas. Former senator.
I'm Caroline Marnock.
Okay.
Who's best first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having us here this morning. I am one of Representative Greenlick, so Lloyd Burns.
And I'm sorry, you need to identify yourself again. Thank you.
Sure.
We need to know on the video, on the audio record, who's speaking. Thank you.
I should know this. I'm an attorney by my job, so I know what the record's all about. But my name is Lloyd Bernstein. I'm from Beaverton. I'm in Representative Greenlick's district, and I am one of the parents that brought this issue to Mitch as a result of what happened in our classroom. I have three kids in the Beaverton School District. They're all at Terra Linda Elementary School. I have a father-in-law that was superintendent of schools down in Southern Oregon for over 25 years. My mother-in-law was a teacher, so I've seen this issue and discussed this issue from many different facets. What happened in our classroom was a fourth grade classroom, elementary school, as a result of the budget cuts that happened at Beaverton School District that everybody's talked about, teachers were laid off, the transfer and bumping process occurred, and my daughter's classroom got a middle school art teacher, 25 plus year teacher. Wonderful lady. We met her the first week of school. She had her classroom introduction, but she wasn't qualified to teach the fourth grade class. She had the right licensing, and she had seniority, so through the system she got the class. And she'd be the first to admit it. This wasn't where she should have been. And the fourth grade class is difficult, and she hadn't taught a curriculum before, and so things didn't quite work out as well as everybody had planned. Over the course of time, they brought in a substitute teacher, and she went out on leave. But that's sort of how my journey began. We started to look for solutions. What happened? How did this happen? You know, we read about it in the Oregonian that things were happening because of budget cuts, but we couldn't quite piece together how our classroom situation got to be where it was. We talked to the principal. The principal couldn't fix it. We asked him, what input did you have when this occurred? And the principal's response was he didn't have any. We went to the superintendent, asked them what happened, and the school board. And that's when we started to discover the statute that's in place and everything that happened afterwards. So we quickly started doing our research. There was a couple of parents from that classroom that started to get together. And then we started to meet separately just to try to figure out how do we go and address this situation. And we learned quickly that this process occurred with very little input from the teacher, from the principal, and from those that were affected by the transfer. What we did learn was that, for better or for worse, the way the statute is written now is seniority and licensing are the only two mandatory considerations. And what they did was, they called it an algorithm. They essentially can make a mathematical formula based on your seniority and using the licensing, and that's how they rank folks. And then that would push out folks that would have to be laid off based on this algorithm, and then that would set up how people would be bumped. And so you had this massive 340-plus positions being moved around that was being governed by a mathematical formula. Competency was there to be considered. And here's where I'd like to clarify some of the earlier comments. As the statute is written now, competency is a consideration. It's been defined in this statute since 1997. There was an overhaul of a whole series of education-related bills, and this definition that sits there now was brought in 1997. The difference that this bill is trying to make is that competency should be a mandatory consideration, not discretionary. Discretionary, it got put to the side for whatever reason in the Beaverton School District, probably because of the massive size of what was happening, but this bill is asking that competency be a mandatory consideration. This notion that there's a concern about how it may be applied in the definition, it can be applied right now. It could have been applied. We're just asking that when there's massive layoffs that result from a budget-related cut, the magnitude that Beaverton saw, that competency be something that's mandatory, not necessarily discretionary. So my story was one of many. As we kind of continued down and met as parents and started to discuss this issue, along the way, I also became affiliated with Stanford Children and learned stories through those folks and just through the Beaverton. There is an elementary school in the Beaverton School District where they had trained a teacher for a pilot program. They had spent $5,000 to train this teacher in a new school for a pilot program. Because of this process, because competency wasn't mandatory, that teacher was then bumped and transferred out a year or two after they spent this money to a different school, and now the teacher has since quit. So that's just one example. There's a middle school situation where they have a science teacher and a social studies teacher that are teaching the opposites. The science teacher is teaching social studies. The social studies is teaching science. And they couldn't mix them back because of this algorithm. They've now since been able to try to work that out because the BEA and the school district are working together to try and fix some of these things. But these are instances that could have been addressed, we believe, on the front end if competency was a mandatory consideration. I won't go through all the experiences and all the stories we've heard. We'll get all that to you. Coming back just to my classroom, my daughter's classroom, after we had a full-time sub for the rest of the first half of the year, then we got a new teacher, so we're on teacher three. She's wonderful. She's a 3- or 4-year teacher. She got laid off because of the process and then got recalled back on, and she's wonderful, and she's perfect for the classroom. The unfortunate thing is we had one child that was a little behind starting the year. Parents paid for tutors to get him ready for fourth grade, and then because the whole first semester was slowed down because of the constant changeover, that poor kid had to be, his parents pulled him out and transferred him to another school. So that's an example of what happens sometimes when you don't look at competency, and while there's no evil intention, you have a teacher that just is misplaced. So on behalf of the parents that I've communicated with, on behalf of my own children and Beaverton School District and everybody else, I think competency needs to be addressed as a mandatory consideration. I'm not naive. I recognize that funding is the key to a lot of this. The other thing about this bill that we need to consider is it only triggers when there's a mandatory budgetary type layoff process. This competency issue doesn't have to be addressed every time they want to lay off a teacher or transfer a teacher. It triggers only when, as a result of administrative budgetary concerns. Some groups have suggested that we should focus our efforts elsewhere, particularly the finances, and not worry about this statute being triggered again. I think we can all agree it's hard to predict what this education budget's going to look like this year. even if they come in at the $6.75 billion that people are talking about, that's still a shortfall in many districts, including Beaverton, where this statute may be triggered yet again. If it gets triggered again, we're going to have all these series of cuts going on top of last year's series of cuts. We need to address this now. I don't want to wait around to see if the budget comes in big enough to support funding so there are no cuts. I think it's hard for anyone to argue that competency shouldn't be a mandatory consideration. We're not saying competency should trump any of the others. You'll still have seniority. There'll still be licensing, but competency should also be a mandatory consideration. There's a new normal now, and unfortunately for Oregon schools and Oregon school districts, they have to do more with less. So in that new normal, we must preserve the most effective teachers, not necessarily the most senior teachers. And then think about the message we're sending our young teachers. If you're not with past that 5 years, you're expendable. You can be laid off without any consideration for your competency. It's very important that we get this process right. I agree with everybody that's talked about that. But we have an obligation to make sure our education system properly educates our kids. In carrying out that obligation, the state, this legislative body, must balance the interests of teachers and students to assure that that promise is honored. I believe, and many others believe, that this bill helps and take a step in the right direction. And I respectfully ask that this committee give this bill the due consideration it deserves.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Chair Doherty, committee members. My name is Caroline Marnock, and I'm a parent of two junior boys at Lincoln High School. And, you know, I'm here this morning for a couple of reasons. The first, actually, is to prove my dental hygienist wrong. Mm-hmm. The last time she cleaned my teeth, she told me that she was glad her children were no longer in Portland Public Schools. She said that our state's public education had deteriorated and that our leaders have done nothing for years. She thought it was a waste of time. You know, her hopelessness was depressing, you know, and frankly, scary. You know, obviously, I don't think that it's a waste of time to try to change things. That's why I'm here. And I can't believe that, because that would mean giving up on my kids who are still in public education. You know, and besides, I believe that this bill is proof that our leaders are also trying to turn things around. You know, and the Oregonian's editorial board also agrees, because recently they just recognized that, quote, promising signs of leadership are emerging, and that our legislators need unrelenting advocacy from the public. So that's the second reason I'm here. I'm here to really speak up for the kids and the families, to give them a voice, and really to the ones that are sticking with the public education despite the decline in funding and the loss of some really great teachers at our schools. So what I want to do is share with you today what happens, actual stories that parents have shared with me in Portland.
You need to address what the bill, please.
Sure. Okay, so what happens when layoffs have occurred in Portland, as what happened in Beaverton? Here's what a parent of a Southwest Portland elementary school wants you to know. We currently have a teacher at my daughter's school who taught music for 16 years, and 3 years ago was forced, due to reductions in staff, to teach second grade. This teacher had never taught second grade or had students for more than 35 minutes at a time for 16 years. However, because of our seniority policy, none of that was taken into account, and six great families left our school mid-year. She then goes on to say that these families, whom she knows personally, wanted to make public school work for them, but they felt completely let down by the archaic mandate set forth by Oregon law. You know, this parent reached out because she and the families at her school are upset, and they're worried that it will happen again. She doesn't want to see other families give up and leave. Another example just happened a year ago. It wasn't fixed. So last year at another Portland elementary, a principal with an opening for a fourth grade teacher wasn't allowed to hire someone with elementary level teaching experience, but instead, due to layoffs, was initially assigned a high school business course teacher. And then when that teacher was essentially hired back with funding increases, then the elementary teacher was assigned a high school PE teacher. Ultimately, through more reassignments, 2 weeks into the school year, a first grade teacher was pulled out from another elementary and put in. So, you know, we really need this law because I think despite these and other similar stories, we can't wait for the districts and the unions to really fix this. Even if some districts have been able to improve their contracts, some have not, either because the agreements haven't been reached or the districts haven't been affected on such a broad scale. So the really great thing about this bill is that it can create an immediate change, and it can improve our education of our kids without costing any extra money. It is that type of innovation. It's a common sense law that we really need, and it's going to restore the trust and the hope for our public education.
Thank you very much. Next.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joy Marshall, and I'm a mom of a seventh grader in Eugene Public Schools and the Lane County Director of Stand for Children. And thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. And I'm here today to talk about why we need to support House Bill 2692 to improve how educator placement decisions are made. In a sentence, we need to use more logic in these decisions. And it's been happening in many districts around Oregon. It's certainly not just Beaverton, also Portland, Eugene, and others. We lost a lot of staff due to budget cuts in 2011, almost 100, and people just got shuffled around. And how were these decisions made? Did they consider where a teacher wanted to be placed, or if the school wanted that individual? Did the principal have any say in building his or her team? No. Did they consider if the person was already connected to a great teacher team that perhaps had worked for years to build their program? Did they consider the needs of the children? No. None of these factors were taken into account. The personnel decisions were based solely on seniority and licensure, and it led to some illogical situations that weren't good for teachers and definitely weren't good for kids. And it caused huge disruption in schools throughout Eugene. My daughter's school experienced this disruption. She goes to Spencer Butte Middle School, which is in Representative Holvey's district. And the budget cuts would have cost them only two FTE, which would have hurt. Right? Class sizes is an enormous problem. I certainly agree. And I will say as an aside that probably nobody has worked harder to improve school funding in our district than myself and our volunteers from Stand for Children. We certainly agree with that problem. But that was not the only problem. Instead of losing two staff because competency was not considered and there was a lot of people displaced, my daughter's school lost 12 staff, which was 40%. 40% of the staff at Spencer Butte Middle School turned over. In fact, I called the principal last week to say, was this for real? And she said, absolutely. And she had no say whatsoever in keeping her teams together or in who got hired in her school. And yet she's supposed to be responsible for the outcomes in her school. So that meant that last September, 40% of the staff showed up not knowing each other, not knowing the students, not knowing their teaching team, not knowing their principal, and not knowing the school culture. It put tremendous stress on people. And yes, many of them made heroic efforts, like we heard described from the teachers in Beaverton, and my hat is off to those people. But the amount of professional development and stress all could have been avoided if we had just had some more logic in this system than we have now. And there was a lag of time. Kids did lose education as people hustled to understand the school and its systems. And our staff at our school has said that to a large degree our math scores went down because of all this displacement and the discipline problems went up. And the people were heroic. The staff really pulled through, but kids were hurt by this system. Another important consideration for middle school is children really need to have connection with adults. And we know that it is this age where children decide if I'm going to college or if I'm dropping out of school. And they've done studies, and certainly common sense, in addition to studies, will tell us these are critical years for the connections with adults. And last year in our district, we let all those kids down. They lost 40% of the adults that they knew. And also isn't good for teachers. Teachers were put into jobs they didn't know and didn't want to be in. At my daughter's school, a wonderful Spanish teacher was very unhappily bumped from another school. And she was put into my daughter's school because she was owed a job. She was put into data management. So our district lost the talents of a great Spanish teacher. She was very unhappy, and she is now going to take a leave from teaching. And there are lots of stories of people put into the wrong situation. Teachers are not just interchangeable pieces. So we want to give districts a tool to improve the process. I know we heard earlier that this bill is not necessary because competency is allowed, but I asked the chair of our school board, who's an attorney, I said, well, what do you think about this? And she said, well, it's allowed. We didn't use it. I know of no district who uses it. So it certainly needs some more oomph to help this happen. And again, it does not get rid of people's seniority protections. It just requires a more rational system. As Lloyd said, it is defined in the bill, and certainly we're open to improving that definition. Nobody would ever, that I work with, would ever want some arbitrary standard. Of course, there could be objective criteria for what constitutes competency, and that's, we would completely support that if that needs to be clarified. This issue matters a lot. I've seen it firsthand in my daughter's school. What we request of you is that you give this a fair airing and support setting a work session for adding competency to personnel decisions. Please don't let this happen. This is not a one-time problem. Indeed, if for our district to avoid cutting staff, we'd have to have a funding level of $6.8 billion next year, which I think we know is not likely. So this is going to be an ongoing situation. We need to do this for kids. So please please give this bill its necessary consideration. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Fagan.
Well, I think probably more of a comment, but first of all, I just want to thank you all for coming out and just acknowledge what a sad state it is of our public schools that we're here having to talk about. Well, in the next round of budget cuts, how about we do it this way? I think that in and of itself is incredibly depressing and telling. I am and also just kind of wanted to mention kind of where my concerns are on the bill, and particularly to Mr. Is it Bernstein?
Yes.
In the middle, and all of you. I'm a mom, and my son is not yet old enough to go to school, but I can only imagine, and I know the reality of when it goes from being kind of the macro understanding of, oh, public schools, to like, oh, my son's actually going to attend a school and have a teacher, and it becomes micro, and it becomes, you look at it differently, and so I certainly empathize with the experience that you've had. I think that I'm a school board member in addition to being a state legislator for the David Douglas District, and I think the concern, I guess, that I have is, as is already allowed, in particularly the last 4 or 6 years, as districts have had to make incredibly difficult decisions, and Mr. Bernstein, with laying off 10% of the staff, is in one swoop, is unbelievable. And it makes me nervous to then kind of use the heavy hand of the state to direct school districts, because we make decisions a lot of the time that parents are incredibly upset about, whether it's blending certain classrooms, closing a certain school, getting rid of certain sports programs, cutting music or art. And this is one of those decisions that at your local school board level, and I assume, given how active you are here, that you've also gone and made the same pleas to your local school districts, because they're all locally elected officials also, and they're accountable to you also. And at least in Beaverton, I know, there's school districts elections coming up in about two months for Beaverton School District. And so it just makes me nervous to set a precedent of the local school district made a decision that parents don't like, even though it was within their power to make a decision differently. We're going to mandate something different, because that opens up, you know, mandating that classes not be blended or that certain elementary schools not be closed. And it opens up a precedent that I feel uncomfortable with. So that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I know there's some amendments being discussed on the bill, so I'm certainly open to the bill, but that's kind of where my concerns are at this point.
Can I try to address that?
Yeah, absolutely. Identify yourself again.
Lloyd Bernstein. So the statute already does mandate that they consider seniority and licensing. So this would only mandate that they consider competency along with those other two prongs. And I don't think it's giving them or requiring them to do anything specific other than they need to consider competency, however that gets defined. But the statute already has mandatory language in it. Statutes have mandatory language throughout them as to what school districts can and can't do. So I think, in relation to your comment, the idea that they're already mandating you have to look at seniority, they're already mandating you have to look at licensing, all this bill is really doing in its essence is mandating you also have to look at competency.
Okay. We're going to have to go a little faster. We have a lot to do today. So if you can make your answer very, very brief.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joy Marshall. I did speak with our Eugene superintendent and the chair of the school board on this, and they said they do not really think they can afford any more mandates from the state. And I said, would you support this? And they said, yes.
Mr. Witt, Representative Witt?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Said you don't. You had a question?
No.
Okay. Representative Wolby, did you have a question, sir?
I can wait a minute. I have some current concerns about the subjectivity of measuring the competence and merit of one teacher versus another teacher, and I would want to see some sort, as you call out, some sort of objective standard that from the Department of Education and who's taking those measurements. I have a great deal of concern about that because you're replacing the system that we have now with another subjective system, it appears to me, unless we can define that.
Okay. And I do have a question. The Beaverton School District can use merit and competence as something that was discussed in earlier bargaining, that kind of thing. Why did the district not use merit?
It's my understanding they didn't use competency because of the magnitude of the layoffs. Their algorithm formula that they had to use to pump in the seniority and the licensing didn't allow them sufficient time to look to see, as those placements came out of the formula, whether or not they were actually good placements.
But they could have done it if they so chose.
They could have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other questions of the panelists? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Stephanie Weber and Kelly Grineau signed up. And if you have written testimony, if you could just summarize it, please. Thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, good morning. My name is, for the record, my name is Kylie Grunow, and I am the Public Policy and Special Projects Director for the Chalkboard Project, and I will keep my comments short and sweet. I think that you've already heard a good discussion about some of the circumstances that brought this legislation forward, but what I will say is that we know teachers have the most significant impact on student achievement in the classrooms. And we need to make sure that every Oregon student has access to a teacher that is both competent and comfortable teaching the subject matter or the grade level that is asked of them. So we need to make sure that any process that is in place during teacher layoffs holds our students as harmless as possible. And part of that is to use competency, their experience in teaching that grade level or that subject, and that should be a requirement rather than an option. Parents, teachers, students all recognize the need to make assignments of teachers based on their competence rather than, say, administrative convenience. We recognize that developing teachers is something that is a demanding, complex task. It requires sustained, significant resources. But we also recognize that a more nuanced system than just licensure and seniority is needed if we are to truly put the needs of our students first. We look forward to working with the different organizations, the Oregon Education Association, Stand for Children, on this practice as it moves forward. We support any legislation that helps ensure that every Oregon student gets a great education.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Weber, and I wasn't planning on talking today, but when I was asked if I wanted to, I'm like, sure. I am a Portland Public School parent, and I'm wondering if I could ask the panel a question.
No.
Okay? I can't.
If you could just stick to your testimony, please.
Okay. I'm curious if my question would have been, how many of you have kids in the system? Because I think that is where it really hits home, right? And that is where this challenge, this disconnect of those of us that care about this aren't necessarily getting enough of this voice coming forward. And so as many of the stories that were told today, I also have experienced teachers that have taught an art class for 35 minutes for 10 years, now teaching third grade. And that doesn't mean that they're not great art teachers. It just means that no one could do that. It'd be the example of taking someone who works at Intel, it's my former employer, and they're in finance for 15 years, and all of a sudden you move them and put them in a hazmat suit, and they're going to work in the fab, the very critical product that Intel makes that could potentially lose millions of dollars in one day if they don't do it right. So I just, short of begging you, that we need some change here. Oregon is one of 10 states in the country that has not modified this policy. That means 80% of our states have changed this ruling with either a slight amendment like what we're asking or radically changed it like Florida. So this is progress. We need some progress in this department. We have amazing teachers. No one in their right mind goes, I think I'm going to teach just to make some money. They do it because they care about it. But why would we take somebody who has a skill in one thing, and they've done that forever, and we force them into something that they're not qualified to do? The statistics are heavy. At Stanford or at Harvard, they did a study on what happens to a child's education if they have one bad teacher, if they have two bad teachers. It's almost they can't recover from it. The statistics are out there. So we're just, I am personally just asking you to really consider making some move, like a small step towards enabling those principals to be able to look at what they have and put the right people in the right seats. There's an awesome book, it's old, but it's called Good to Great by Jim Collins, who's a statistic professor at Stanford. And his whole thing in that book is putting the right people on the bus. And all I'm asking is that you look at who are we putting on the bus, and now let's put the right people on the bus in the right seats. That's all.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, and I'm just going to make a comment because I can't keep my mouth shut on this one. I was a teacher for 11 years, and I worked with teachers for another 22. And the people that are hurt most by this are those teachers that have to have the 55 kids in a classroom. And so I want you to realize that the administration had the ability to go through and use merit and competence in all of the school districts. And let me finish. And I have had tons of layoffs in my 35 years that started out in 1974 with layoffs. And that the administration went through and did the good thing, and they went through and looked at different people. Beaverton is an unusual situation because of the massive layoffs. Other districts have been laying off for the past 10 years. So the layoffs have had less damage. But what you've got to realize is teaching is instinctual. And I've been out of the classroom for a whole long time, but I was a very good teacher. I could go back in that classroom and be a good teacher. I could be a great teacher with more help. And so I want you, some of the comments that have been made today, I want you to realize that the people that care as much, if not more than you do, about the kids in the classroom are the people that are there every single day. And that's just a comment I want to make.
Okay. Can I say a quick comment
quickly,
back to
please.
That? I absolutely agree. I mean, again, there are unbelievable people out there laying it down with 40 kids in their class every day. I mean, these people should be given, like, unbelievable merit increases. I don't know anybody in a workforce that would do that. But all we're asking is that the problem is that these stories aren't made up. I mean,
I realize that.
And over again, and just, I'm not in Beaverton District. This has happened in Portland for years. And there isn't, principals care, but they are handcuffed.
Well, it is, and this is not a new issue. We have been cutting back on education since the 70s, since the 60s, since the 50s. And so I understand.
If a teacher leaves, though, let's say even if a teacher retires, the principal still doesn't have the ability to look at another incoming teacher and what they're.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay, any other questions?
I just want to say that having had three girls go through all of Salem-Keizer School District, and we ran into a teacher who was awful. I mean, the parents of the teacher, the parents of that classroom got together, and they got her out of there. And you know where she ended up? Teaching first grade in another part of the district. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the kids are terribly impacted when you don't have the right teacher in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay, close the public hearing on House Bill 2692 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2915.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill eliminates the requirement to hold annual membership meeting for a very specific type of religious corporation under very specific conditions.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin and I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. I'll be very brief and help you with your schedule. This is a Very straightforward and simple bill. The following bankruptcy a half a dozen years ago, the Oregon Catholic Church in Western Oregon, the Portland Archdiocese, reorganized, and every one of the parishes and schools that have anything to do with the Archdiocese are incorporated as a nonprofit corporation, which results in about 125 individual corporations. The current law requires the sole member of each of those corporations, who is the Archbishop, to attend an annual meeting of that corporation, even though he's a sole member. This bill, after much discussion, is the way out of that, because physically he couldn't possibly do all those things. This simply says that you don't need to have a meeting if he's the sole corporate member of a nonprofit religious corporation. We'd appreciate very much your consideration of this. We very carefully, anytime you touch corporate law in Oregon, you've got to be very cognizant that the Oregon State Bar is concerned. We've worked with the Oregon State Bar from the beginning. They've reviewed this, and they tell us they have no issue or no problem whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. Is there any questions of Mr. Martin? When you said 125, does that mean each parish is considered?
Each parish is an individual corporation. Okay.
And there's no, and we did not purposely schedule this on the day that they are meeting in Rome to select a new.
No.
We did not purposely do that.
No.
But if you need to get back to help do that, we'd understand.
All right.
You need to go back to the lobbying room. And so the whole idea is that the religious corporation, which is the Archdiocese of Portland, has one sole member, and that is the Archbishop.
That is the current Archbishop, and there will be a new Archbishop within the next 15 days, but he has the same role as the current Archbishop.
Okay. Representative Holden.
Thank you, and I'm curious, is the Archdiocese an individual corporation as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, I wish I could answer that accurately. I can't. I'll find that out and get back to you.
I would follow up?
Yes, it is. It's corporation, so sorry.
Okay, thank you, Representative Barton. And so what's the relationship between these individual parishes and the archdiocese? Are they separate or part of, or if they all have the same corporate officer?
There are advisory committees in each of the parishes that work with the archbishop on individual local problems, along with the pastor of that individual parish. But he's the sole member of the corporation for each of those parishes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Thank you. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Keep calling you Barker.
If I may. So it's my understanding, which is not, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, is historically speaking, it was all one corporation. It was a corporation in Seoul, and encapsulated. And essentially, right around 2000, kind of in that major wave of Catholic Church litigation that happened, there was a wave, not just in this archdiocese, but throughout the country, of essentially now there are actually distinct corporations as a means of asset protection, essentially. And but so that's actually fairly common now, that even they are legally distinct entities, even though they have the same corporate officer.
Okay, any other questions, Representative Fagan?
Although I could see how it seems kind of silly to hold a meeting with yourself, I know that one of the purposes of holding the annual meeting is to essentially kind of observe the formalities that make you a corporation, as opposed to kind of, you know, melding the things that would make you kind of a personal individual as opposed to a corporate entity. Would there be any concerns here that would blur that line?
Madam Chair, Representative Fagan, I don't believe so. We've run this past the number of people who said it makes sense, and we don't believe that's a problem.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Representative Barton, for helping.
Thank you. We try to keep lawyers off business and labor, but especially lawyers whose is their birthday today. Yes. It is Representative Barton's birthday today.
Is he 30?
22?
With that, I close the public hearing on 2915 and open up a work session on House Bill 2066. Jan, if you could summarize, remind us of what this is.
I will, Madam Chair, committee members. This is the bill that deals with pawnbrokers and them being allowed to take as a pledge a boat, a trailer, an off-road vehicle, or farm equipment. You have before you the Dash 2 amendment that clarifies the type of vehicles that can be pledged, requires a pawnbroker to record a notation that a lien search was conducted, and provides that the pawnbroker is not liable for refusing to deliver the pledge when more than one person claims redemption rights, unless that pawnbroker fails to verify whether the pledge is subject to the lien. And it requires a pawnbroker to hold specified pledged vehicles in a gated, secured facility. There's no revenue impact on the amendment and no fiscal impact on the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Representative Barton.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2066.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none, the Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2066 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton amends House or moves House Bill 2066 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, if you could call the roll, please.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excuse.
Representative Holden.
Aye.
Representative Whitmer.
Excused.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kennemer.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Is there someone that would like to carry this? Representative Witt will carry this to the floor. Okay, next on the schedule, we had 2383. Okay, close the work session on House Bill 2066. I did want to mention that we did reschedule 2383. We don't know when yet because there are some amendments that have come in and the amendments have not been drafted yet. And also next on the schedule, 2418 has been held over until Wednesday. We're still waiting for a fiscal on that one. We thought we'd have it by now, but it is not. Not come in. And it's the same thing with House Bill 2449. We're going to carry that all over also till Wednesday. So I'd like to open up the work set or the work session on House Bill 2478.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is the bill that extends the sunset to the year 2020 for tax credit for payments to employee independent scholarship program. There's before you the Dash 1 amendment that requires the scholarship be used to pay expenses for attending a educational facility in Oregon. The bill has a referral to the Joint Tax Credit Committee, and one thing that committee is asking is that the policy committee here today discuss the intent of this tax credit.
Is this intent we can discuss now, or do you want us? Because the one thing when we did this, remember, this was a tax credit for the scholarships, and there are a few companies in Oregon that go through and take advantage of this. But of the companies that have, to me, the intent is that you have a local company who is given a tax credit to send a local student to. There has been an amendment that they now have to send to Oregon's universities, colleges and universities, whether they be public or private. And so I ask that an amendment be put in. So it's the idea that local companies, local child, local school. So that was at least my intent. Yeah. Representative Kennemer.
And I think one more thing is we were thinking that perhaps momentum will occur. Mm-hmm. It's not been heavily used, but as people become more familiar with it, it seemed to us that it would, at least to me and I think a number of us, that it would be appropriate to extend it in hopes that it would be more broadly used.
Okay. Any other? Representative Barton. And
Madam Chair, for what it's worth, I frankly didn't know about the existence of this tax credit. Having now learned about it, I think my firm will start offering it to our employees. I wasn't aware of the amendment that it go only to a public school?
Not a public school, an Oregon school.
Oregon school.
Okay,
school,
I see.
An Oregon
gotcha,
public
gotcha,
or
gotcha.
Private.
Great.
Okay. Representative Witt and Representative Thatcher.
Madam Chair, I have a particular concern with all of the money that our state is hemorrhaging due to tax expenditures. I believe that corporations should, if they choose to offer some kind of scholarship, do that on the basis of the scholarship and the need potentially for employees of their, or rather dependents of their employees' need for scholarships. There are only three businesses that are taking advantage of this at this time. And I think that this is the perfect place for our state to begin eliminating tax expenditures that we can no longer afford. I will be a no on the bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Thatcher.
It is my understanding that there were only three businesses mm-hmm. that took advantage. It sounds like they're going to try to expand this further. That's what I'm hearing. And anyway, I'm wondering how many students have benefited from this so far. I have some unanswered questions too, so I'm going to be withholding a yes at this point. So.
Okay, thank you, Representative Fagan.
I had a question also in a similar vein as Representative Witt, and I'm new at this of reading these, but I understand that this has a minimal fiscal impact. Is that the impact as is currently used by only a few businesses, or is that the projected impact going forward?
The fiscal, do you know that answer?
Representative Fagan, committee members, we have the revenue impact that basically is saying since this bill is moving to the Joint Committee on Tax Credit, they're going to do further analysis
okay.
on it. And the fiscal impact says that there is a minimal expenditure impact. And I'm not sure if they draw that line at $50,000, the impact on state and local, but it is not reaching the threshold in which they issue an impact statement.
Mm-hmm. Because we just do the policy end of it, the tax credit, Joint Tax Credit Committee will decide whether the tax credit will go on.
Well, I will.
Then to Fagan, and then we'll go to follow up, then we'll go down here.
So the discussions I've had about this have been a consideration of possibly means testing is not the right term for a corporation, but the idea being that perhaps this could apply to smaller businesses as opposed to larger corporations. So I will vote yes today with the intent of trying to work on some amendments in the revenue committee, so with reserving the right to vote no on the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions down here? Representative Thompson, then Representative Foley.
Are there any sideboards on this that would prevent me as a business owner from setting up a scholarship for my grandson who then goes to school on a tax credit, but people who don't own businesses couldn't do that for their children or grandchildren? Is there a competitive
yes.
sort of thing? I'm seeing some abuse lined up here where if I happen to be the owner of a business, I can send my kids to college on a tax credit. But my employee who doesn't own a business can't do that for their children because my employee doesn't own a business.
Okay, I don't know the answer to that. Jan, do you?
I'm Representative Thompson, committee members. This, if we remember, we heard from the Oregon Student Access Commission, mm-hmm. and they are the agency that provides a review of it, and they have to qualify, but I don't know specifically mm-hmm. if the situation you're describing is something that OSAC is looking into. But there is a qualification process through OSAC.
Having paid for a couple of educations, I'm not sure it's not a good idea to let businesses do that, but there's an unfair advantage to the people who own businesses versus people who don't own businesses
yeah.
if there's no competitive edge here.
And actually, I think this would be a good question, you know, once we've talked about the
yeah.
policies of for the Joint Tax Credit Committee to go through.
I'll support this out of committee, but I would reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
Okay, thank you. Representative Foley.
Madam Chair, I
I do have concerns with this tax credit because I believe it's been an ineffective tax credit that has been taken advantage of by only a very few. It has not really served the state of Oregon. So I have a great deal of problems supporting it moving forward at this time because it just doesn't. However, the amendments could maybe, you know, help. It just seems that it's been an ineffective tax credit, and maybe they need to take a new look at providing some sort of tax credit that would be more effective than this one.
Okay, and these are the comments that will be forwarded on to the Joint Tax Credit Committee, which is the one that makes the ultimate decision. So thank you for those comments. Other comments or issues that need to be brought forward to the Joint Tax Credit Committee on this issue? Okay.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2478.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none.
Is there any objection?
Pardon?
You have to ask if there's any objection.
Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing none, the Dash 1 amendments are adopted. They will be voting on that as to whether it's a two pass.
So, do you want me to send it? We're going to send it. Do you want me to send it with a do pass recommendation
yes.
or without recommendation?
Yes. We vote on that whether we want to do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2478 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 2478 to the floor with a do pass as amended. Recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Witt and Representative Thatcher.
Madam Chair, I just think that and fully recognize that the bill undoubtedly will be moved out of committee. I would like to voice a strong preference that it go out of here without recommendation.
Okay. Madam Chair. Representative Thatcher was next.
I think Representative Whip brings up an interesting point. I would entertain that as well. But I also wanted to make sure that the objections and concerns and also support All the comments made mm-hmm. would be maybe put into a written report and not, you know, not having to depend on people listening to a recording. I know I probably wouldn't go through it and listen to what the prior okay. committee heard, but I would like a report. So just stay
okay. there. I have one other comment, and then we'll see. We can readopt.
I would agree with Representative Witt. It's interesting to hear just how many concerns there are on the committee. I guess I probably should have mentioned this during objections. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning this Mason's thing, but it almost seems to me as if this might be a good place to amend it, considering the concerns of so many folks on the committee. But I think we're probably already past that point, and now we have to move it. But I would agree, if we have to move it out of this committee and we can't amend it here, that we would do so without a due pass recommendation.
Okay. What we can do is we can move to withdraw the motion and have a different recommendation. So, Representative Barton, would you
Madam
like to
Chair,
do that?
It's a motion, I believe. So, I yeah. move to withdraw my motion.
Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing none. Representative Barton?
My motion is withdrawn?
Yes, your motion is withdrawn.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2478 to the floor without recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference.
Okay. Representative Barton has moved House Bill 2478 to the floor with a no recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Witt?
Madam Chair, I just want to express my appreciation for this motion.
Thank you. Representative Fagan?
I would be curious, I'm playing my new card again, mm-hmm. what is the interest in keeping it here and moving it out only as amended? Because it just seems to me there's a lot of people with concerns, as opposed to us having to kind of go watch it in the tax credit committee. Why not just amend it here in this committee before we actually move it out?
I think part of it is we don't really know. I think one of the amendments is total deletion of it. And I think we haven't had a lot of discussion about what amendments are. What we're dealing with is a policy end of it. And so by sending the Joint Tax Credit Committee and the floor this kind of message, I think sends kind of a strong message. I'm not quite sure what sort of amendments would want to do or whether people would want to deal with amendments on the tax credit on this. Is there any groundswell?
Madam Chair, I think you make a good point. It's difficult for us to make this an effective tax credit in this committee. And I appreciate that you've amended the motion to go without recommendation. And I'll be able to support that vote.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Brandon, could you please call the roll?
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
No.
Representative Wightman.
Excused.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kennemer.
Aye.
Aye. Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Is there someone who would like to carry this on the floor?
I'm not necessary.
Yes,
it's not necessary? Okay. Never mind. You won't do that. Okay, I close the work session on House Bill 2478 and open up a work session on House Bill 2545. Jan, if you could summarize, please.
Committee members, this is a bill that permits the Labor Commissioner to bar from public works contract any contractor or subcontractor that is a limited liability company if a member or manager of that company fails to pay or post prevailing wage, fails to pay the subcontractor's employees when the contractor pays the employees on the subcontractor's behalf, or falsifies information on certified statements, declares an emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments before you. There is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Thank you. Mr. Martin?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2545 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barton moves House Bill 2545 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher?
Representative Barton's head. Thank you. I am supporting this with the understanding that this is just an addition to what apparently was an oversight and not a change in fashion, because I could not tell at this point if it was. I did not see an SMS last night anyway. Anyway, I'm just giving my hesitant yes.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
I think
Representative Fulvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and in light of Representative Thatcher's comments, I did bring this bill forward and did, not receive any opposition to the bill, and was worried about the clarification of how the members of the LLC were treated individually, and was concerned about making sure that it was we were talking about the members that were responsible for the action, and that's the way the bill is worded, and we went and tried to figure out a way to make that more specific, but it really just came back to the language that's in the bill. It's been existing language. The only thing is limited liability companies, as you know, are relatively new in the scheme of the business world in Oregon, and so this just adds them into the general scheme of other businesses in regards to BOLI's authority to debar. Thank you.
Did that answer?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, Brandon, could you please call the roll?
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Weidner.
Excused.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Representative Barton.
Aye.
Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Representative Holby, would you carry this to the floor, please?
Certainly.
Thank you. Okay, I close this work session on House Bill 2545 and open up a work session on House Bill 2990. Jan, if you could summarize.
Madam Chair and committee members, this is the first time the committee has seen this bill. It requires a person engaged in trade or business that makes payment for construction services to report to the payee and to the Department of Revenue. Provides for penalties for the failure to make the required report, takes effect 91 days after sine die. There are no amendments. There is a subsequent referral to the House Revenue Committee. I believe it was the intent of the chair that, or the belief of the chair that this bill would be dealt with more appropriately in House Revenue.
Okay.
So would you make a motion with that recommendation? We're just shipping it to Revenue. Is that right, Madam Chair?
That's it.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2990 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 2990 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Revenue with prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I guess in keeping with not wanting to send the tax credit to the Tax Credit Committee, I'm gonna say that I just want to send a message on this one. I'm not thrilled about this bill either. So,
okay. Fine. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay. If there's no further discussion, Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Weidner.
Excused.
Representative Holden.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay. The motion passes. And with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2990. And if there's no other business before us, I adjourn the meeting of the House Business and Labor Committee. We're done.